Blog Talk Radio.
For radio as godless as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio.
Get vaccinated. We need herd immunity, not herd mentality.
After talking about what's wrong with prayer walks in public schools, we'll meet Mohamed Cisse,
a former African imam who tells us why he no longer believes.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. UN weather experts said on Thursday that they're actively looking into a possible record temperature for continental Europe of 48.8 degrees Celsius, 119.8 degrees Fahrenheit, in the town of Siracusa in Sicily. The World Meteorological Organization said it could not yet confirm or deny the temperature reading, which was taken on Wednesday by an agricultural forecasting service on the island and not the official Italian weather service. Only days ago, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change issued a report highlighting the indisputable impact of human activity on extreme weather events. The WMO said that a rapid response team is now in contact with the Sicilian Weather Service in order to decide if this new temperature spike beats Europe's existing high of 48 degrees Celsius, 118.4 degrees Fahrenheit, which happened in Athens on the 10th of July 1977. The development comes amid fresh heatwave alerts and concerns over wildfires in Algeria, where the National Weather Service forecasts temperatures of at least 44 degrees Celsius or 111.2 degrees Fahrenheit, with highs of perhaps 47 degrees Celsius or 116.6 degrees Fahrenheit. The extent of the massive forest blazes in the North African country were clearly visible from space and published on Tuesday by NASA. One image captured by the Aqua satellite showed a vast plume of smoke over northern Algeria, where more than 62,000 hectares have burnt so far this year, according to the European Forest Fire Information System. Afghanistan has seen a huge spike in mass displacement since May, and humanitarians are increasingly concerned about the country's people as Taliban forces make fresh territorial gains, the UN has warned. Some 390,000 people have been forced to flee conflict across the country since the start of the year, according to OCHA, the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. The agency noted too that between the 1st of July and the 5th of August, 5,800 internally displaced people had arrived in Kabul, with hundreds more now arriving each day, according to latest reports. The most vulnerable have now received assistance, including food, household items, water and sanitation support. Although most of the new arrivals have been hosted by families and friends, a growing number are staying in the open, the OCHA said. To help them, aid assessment teams have been deployed and temporary health clinics and mobile health teams are already up and running. Despite the worsening security situation, humanitarian agencies continue to deliver assistance to those in need, reaching 7.8 million people in the first 6 months of the year. Additional funds are urgently needed, however, as the $1.3 billion humanitarian response plan for Afghanistan is only 38% funded. Three new candidate drugs are being tested in the latest phase of global trials to find effective treatments against COVID-19, the World Health Organization's announced. The therapies, artesunate, imatinib and infliximab, will be tested on hospitalized coronavirus patients in 52 countries under the Solidarity Plus program. The drugs are already being used to treat other conditions. There have been more than 203 million confirmed cases of COVID-19, according to the WHO, which noted that the world hit the 200 million mark last week, just 6 months after infections passed 100 million. Speaking in Geneva, agency chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus underscored the critical need to find more effective and accessible COVID-19 therapeutics. He said that although oxygen, dexamethasone and IL-6 blockers were effective in treating patients, we need more for patients at all ends of the clinical spectrum, from mild to severe disease. Tedros insisted that health workers needed to be trained to use these therapeutics too. The three drugs are selected by an independent panel for their potential in reducing the risk of death in people hospitalized for COVID-19. Katie Dartford, UN News.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
I'm Annie-Laure Gaylor. Welcome to Free Thought Radio. And imagine all the people vaccinated. That is going to be one of the themes of our show today.
That's one way to be living for today, is not dying of COVID. I'm Dan Barker, co-host of Free Thought Radio, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves, I've sometimes been called. This is Free Thought Radio for August 12th, 2021. Grant Blaschka, who's with the recording studio Audio for the Arts, is our engineer. He's producing the show in our studio, the Stephen Yule Friendly Atheist Studio in Freethought Hall, which is the national office of the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Madison, Wisconsin.
Yeah, and Dan, you can take your mask off around me. I think it's going to get in the way of your enunciation.
Oh, that's true. I pulled it halfway down here.
I just kept it on out of habit.
You're not going to get me sick, are you?
No. So the Freedom From Religion Foundation, of course, produces this weekly radio show and podcast. And FFRF began in 1978 to try to quell Reverend Jerry Falwell in the early days of Christian nationalism in our country. And we're still here fighting to remind the nation of our secular roots and to work as an association for like-minded individuals who are personally free from religion. We're a 501c3 tax-exempt organization with a 4-star rating from Cherry Navigator. Look it up.
And 100%.
100%. We're one out of a million. And we'd be glad to send you a complimentary newspaper and brochure about our many achievements. You can just click on the Ask for Info link at FFRF.org.
Today, we're going to talk with a former Muslim imam from Africa. He is now an atheist. Mohamed Cisse is now on the board of the Clergy Project, and he has a powerful story we're going to hear in a few minutes.
And before that, we're going to talk with FFRF education attorney Liz Cavell about something very bizarre you may never have heard of, unless you're a faithful listener of Free Thought Radio, and that is prayer walks. Prayer walks and in public schools. And we have just issued a report about this bizarre Christian entanglement with our schools. And Liz will come on and tell us more about it.
This week is the birth week of the rock climber, the famous rock climber, Alex Honnold. He was born August 17, 1985. Honnold is the only person to have free solo climbed El Capitan, which was the subject of the 2018 documentary movie Free Solo, which won a BAFTA and an Academy Award.
And Alex Honnold is an atheist. For the film A Better Life, he told filmmaker Chris Johnson, whom we've had on this show, that the religion of his childhood just never took.
As a kid, I was taken to church, but it's hard to say that I was raised Catholic because I never cared about church at all. And my sister and I were both in CCD, like in Catholic school or whatever, until, I don't know until what age, but to get your confirmation, you have to like voluntarily agree to it, and my older sister refused. And so she got like talked to by the nuns and told she was going to hell and all that kind of stuff, and she like didn't really care. And so mom just took us out of CCD after that because she's like, well, what's the point if you're not going to like actually go through confirmation and do those things? And then by the time we were like 12 or 13, we just stopped going to church at all because mom was just sick of like the epic arguments every weekend trying to like drag us out of the house.
Pretty entertaining. So this week yesterday on our live Facebook TV show or video show, Ask an Atheist, I spoke with FFRF's Ann Nicole Gaylor reproductive rights intern, Barbara Alvarez, about disinformation and misinformation and explicitly fake news about reproductive rights that is brought about because of religious extremists, that is propagated by religious extremists. And I guess we have a clip.
We've heard a lot about fake news, misinformation, and disinformation. And sometimes these words get lumped together and they lose all meaning. However, they are distinctly different. So by definition, misinformation means false information that's spread regardless of intent to mislead. So basically, misinformation is wrong information. Disinformation is distinctly different. Disinformation is defined as deliberately misleading or biased information, manipulative narratives or facts, and propaganda. So basically, disinformation is knowingly sharing false information for specific purposes. And when we're talking about fake news, that's kind of an umbrella for misinformation and disinformation. Now, in the realm of reproductive rights, disinformation is being shared constantly in the United States and around the world. And the disinformation that we're seeing right now is specifically about abortion pill reversal treatment, the supposed harms of getting an abortion, and fetal viability. And we're seeing this in legislation as well as in crisis pregnancy centers that use taxpayer dollars to spread this incorrect information. And it's really a crisis.
Yes, it is really a crisis. And you can catch that entire show on FFRF's YouTube channel. Just go to the YouTube on FFRF and select the Ask an Atheist playlist. The show includes questions from the viewing audience.
And you can tune in next week to the live show and ask questions of your own. FFRF's Ask an Atheist usually airs weekly at noon Central Time on FFRF's Facebook page.
So, let's get to the news here. Christian nationalists have furthered their unconstitutional cause in the Granite State. The New Hampshire Governor, Chris Sununu, has signed into law a bill that prohibits a state or the school district from restricting the display of the U.S. motto, "In God We Trust," or the state's own motto, "Live Free or Die," in any school building. This bill was authored by a national special interest group committed to advancing Christian nationalism across the country. They're demanding that we trust in their Christian God, contrary to the U.S. founders and the Constitution's trust in we, the people.
And more then, than Dan, how many people in New Hampshire identify as unaffiliated?
More than a third, 36% of New Hampshire citizens call themselves atheist or agnostic or nothing in particular. So the group that's pushing this is, we've talked about this before, it's called Project Blitz. They're trying to inject state legislatures with a whole bunch of religious bills, including the theocratic version of a powerful few people.
So, you know, what's very distressing is that New Hampshire is, and New England in general, is part of the more secular part of our country. And they were Project Blitz people, part of the Congressional Prayer Caucus set off Project Blitz, were successful in getting this legislation passed in such a secular stronghold. So it's really insulting to the citizens of New Hampshire. And I think maybe instead of calling them the Granite State, we should call them the Stone Age State.
That's a good idea. They're also introducing other bills, including allowing a Christian nationalist group to mandate legislation on LGBT and on COVID restrictions. So we need to keep watching this.
So in the news, most of the news in the nation right now, of course, relates to COVID-19. We started with the one development that isn't about COVID. So there's a whole roster of things that happened, and FFRF put out a press release to bring attention to a study from, I think it was Reuters, did a study on so-called shadow docket cases by the U.S. Supreme Court. And these shadow docket cases are cases that go up very quickly without argumentation. They are actions taken usually without even often a ruling, a written ruling.
Well, they're pretended to be emergency.
They're emergency
actions.
And so Reuters at the end of July pointed out that, let's see, there were 150 emergency applications in the past year. Only 29 such requests were granted by the Supreme Court, at least in part. But all of the religious entities that challenged COVID mitigation rules, all 10 of them prevailed. It was 10 on 10. And the Trump administration also prevailed equally in its quest largely to execute death penalty inmates. So this is a warning. This shows that we are in serious trouble with the U.S. Supreme Court when it is siding with religious objections to COVID-19 health measures. to privilege religion, and these aren't just saying churches can be exempt. In many of these cases, the churches are overturning or were overturning mandates that affected all citizens in that location, endangering lives and endangering health. So you've heard the warning. We continue to warn about what has happened to our U.S. Supreme Court.
Now to Florida.
Well, to Florida, of course, we are condemning Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who unbelievably is forbidding Florida public school districts to require masks this fall, despite the huge spike in infection rates in Florida, where, my gosh, I don't have that in front of me, but they are one of the, they're disproportionately affected by COVID right now. And what he's also done is very insidious. He's encouraging parents in schools that are flouting his ban, that are asking children and staff to mask, which is the science right now because children cannot be vaccinated. He's encouraging them to leave the public schools, take that public money with them, and direct it to parochial schools. These are private schools that are almost all voucher schools, religious schools. Almost all private schools are religious. So really, really insidious. And likewise, Abbott in Texas. And I did a blog about this saying we need herd immunity, not herd mentality. And in Texas, of course, Abbott is also refusing to let locales make their own decisions, let schools make their own decisions, saying you can't mask. And, you know, here their hospitals are overflowing. There's just more news today about that the public health cannot be guarded because there's so much COVID. And we point out that Steven Weinberg, who was a Texas professor and won our first Emperor Has No Clothes Award, had said religion is an insult to human dignity. With or without it, you would have good people doing good things and evil people doing evil things. But for good people to do evil things, that takes religion. And that's what we're seeing. Maybe Abbott doesn't qualify as a good person, but certainly his actions qualify as evil. And we have... I have the statistic on Florida. It's hosting about 20% of the new COVID-19 cases, positivity rate of about 12%, yet it only has 7% of the U.S. population.
Yeah.
So there you go. That is religion irrationality triumphing. So we wrote a letter, Dan and I, to President Biden, asking him to use executive measures to incentivize vaccine mandates. And we praised him for the federal employee mandate.
In the military.
For the military, although they are sure letting them take their time. I'm hoping that they will make that deadline sooner than November. But we pointed out to him urging, begging, bribing, and sadly, reasoning with many unvaccinated Americans has had too little effect, and we are asking Biden to wield the influence and authority of the federal government to incentivize vaccine mandates. And here's some creative ideas. We think that they can require public schools that want to get federal funds to ensure that staff and eligible students are vaccinated. Biden can require vaccinations for air travel. That's an obvious, though. Biden can withhold federal funding for federal contractors and businesses that don't require COVID vaccinations, and that specifically includes many police departments that are refusing to get vaccinated. The sheriffs are refusing to make mandates. They should not be eligible to purchase decommissioned gear and materials unless they have mandated vaccinations for their staff. So let's hope we see some more requirements for vaccinations very shortly.
So we're going to take a break. We have some interesting things coming up. After the break, we're going to talk with FFRF attorney Liz Cavell. She was the main author of this study about prayer walks that we talked about, and she's going to tell us more about how you can see that study that's online. And then after that, we're going to talk with Mohamed Cisse. He's a former African imam. He's now an atheist, and Mohamed is on the board of the Clergy Project, which helps clergy, ministers, priests, rabbis, imams, and others who have given up their faith in the supernatural, helps them to leave the ministry. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
Hi, I'm Julia Sweeney, and I'm an atheist and former Catholic. I even wrote a play about it called Letting Go of God. Right now, Catholic bishops are using their considerable influence to deny women contraceptive rights. Please join the Freedom from Religion Foundation and help keep church and state separate. You can call 1-800-335-4021, that's 1-800-335-4021, or visit ffrf.org to stand up for true religious freedom.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. We are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and we have on the phone with us FFRF attorney Liz Cavell, returning for another interview. Liz is in charge of our legal education and just authored a report for the Freedom From Religion Foundation called Prayer Walks and Public Schools. Welcome back to Free Thought Radio, Liz.
Hello, it's good to be back.
So, Liz, what on earth is a prayer walk?
Well, unfortunately, we've become all too familiar with this phenomenon, and it is a back-to-school phenomenon that FFRF Legal Department has noticed the past few years. They've become more and more commonly reported by parents in school districts, and usually they take place before the start of the school year, and it involves people, adults, gathering at public schools and walking around campus and oftentimes inside of school halls and classrooms to pray over the school for the upcoming school year.
I see a picture on the report. There's these women with their hands on one of the school doors and their eyes are closed, and they're like doing magic on the door or something. What are they doing?
Yeah, it's really odd, but it's become something that we hear about every school year, and more so at the start of the school year, where, you know, it's adults that are kind of doing the typical laying hands on the school to kind of pray over and bless the space for a safe school year, and it's all just, you know, magical thinking. But, of course, it creates constitutional problems because there are often ways in which the public school administrators or staff are involving themselves in these events, which are clearly religious prayer events.
So can you give us some examples, Liz?
Yeah, so for example, we kind of hear it, you know, in different, at different levels of school participation. But the most egregious one, which we do hear about, unfortunately, all too often, is that it's the school itself or school staff, individual teachers or administrators, that are actually hosting these events. So, you know, they're coming up with the idea, they're inviting people. Oftentimes we see school resources being used to sort of publicize the event. In one complaint, we had a school principal using the automated phone system that, you know, the school district would use for weather closures and things like that to send out an announcement about a school prayer walk and to invite district parents and students. So there's just kind of the typical school-sponsored religious event, which is clearly unconstitutional. But then sometimes these events are privately hosted by a church group, you know, a group of church ladies or a ministerial association or something like that. But the school will involve itself by either promoting the event on official school channels like the website or through social media, and or the district will give special access to the school campus for religionists to do their prayer walks or, you know, it takes different iterations. Sometimes they're walking around praying. We've had complaints where clergy show up and they're sprinkling holy water all over the school, and they're getting special access to the campus to do this, which obviously is problematic too.
Liz, in the report, you mentioned Summer Creek High School in Texas hosting a prayer walk to celebrate a merger of two area high schools. So they had this prayer walk, and then they promoted the event on the web page using the slogan, Two Schools, One God.
Huh.
What's wrong with that?
On their official webpage?
So wrong. So wrong. And so I did say that they often come up in the context of kind of blessing the new school year, but we have heard from parents and students about prayer walks, these types of events that occur for, you know, other reasons. It's kind of like all they need is a reason. So this was a school merger, and I mean, it's just all kinds of unconstitutional, just, you know, two schools, one God, which is just flagrant, you know, like theocratic, you know, parochial school nonsense. But we've also seen kind of more predictably prayer walks taking place when there's some kind of violence at the school, like a shooting or a student or a staff member that has an illness. You know, it's kind of like all any reason that religionists might have to kind of gather and pray in public schools has, it seems, have generated this idea of a prayer walk. And so it's really problematic because there's really no way to do it and gain the access you need to schools without the cooperation and the endorsement of the school district.
That's right. And then you also, this report also points out about prayer walks outside schools involving other kinds of governmental agencies. And the one that caught my eye, Liz, is this Cary Police Department in North Carolina, where on-duty uniformed officers participated in a prayer walk and were seen at a religious clergy foot washing ceremony.
Foot washing?
Yes. So foot washing. You know, that old unhygienic, biblical, awful ritual. So this, we did point out in the report, although our focus is on public schools because it's our focus in all of our legal work because those are the most vulnerable and captive of audiences. We have kind of noticed an uptick in this phenomenon of doing a prayer walk instead of doing any actual secular work. And of course it pops up a lot in law enforcement agencies where, or, you know, people that are in a political position where they're organizing a prayer walk around the community to fight crime. You know,
we're out of time for this. Rate. Liz, thanks so much for joining us and for writing this, researching it. You can find the report Prayer Walks in Public Schools up at our website under the news link. That press release went up recently. We have a new website, by the way, we should point out. New look. But thanks so much, Liz.
Oh, sure. Thank you for talking to me.
So stay tuned. After the break, we're going to hear from a former African imam. His name is Mohamed Cisse, who was a strong Islamic believer. He lost his faith in the supernatural. He's now an atheist, and he's on the board of the Clergy Project. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be back with more Free Thought Radio.
Hi, I'm Steve Pinker. In my book, Enlightenment Now, I show that the world has become a better place as reason has been overcoming superstition and tribalism. But the values of the Enlightenment are under attack. That's why I'm a proud member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest association of free thinkers working to keep state and church separate. Please join me in supporting the Freedom From Religion Foundation to ensure that our government is driven not by religion, but by reason.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. Welcome back to Free Thought Radio. A couple of weeks ago on this show, we spoke with Lon Ostrander. He's the president of the Clergy Project. That's an organization that helps clergy, ministers, priests, rabbis, and other religious clergy who have abandoned belief in the supernatural, and some of whom need help in leaving the pulpit. Most of the more than 1,100 participants so far have been Christian clergy, mainly Protestant and Catholic.
But the group does have some rabbis and even a handful of Muslim imams who have seen the light of reason. One of these former imams is Mohamed Cisse, originally from the Ivory Coast, Côte d'Ivoire, Africa. He's now living in Alaska. Mohamed is not just a member of the Clergy Project, he is on the board of directors. So we're so happy to talk with you this morning, Mohamed. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So you were an imam in the Islamic religion, in the Muslim religion. So tell us how that came about. I understand your grandfather and your father were also highly respected imams in Africa. Is that true?
Yeah, I was born in a completely 100% Muslim Islamic leadership family. My mom's father was the, you know, community leader, Muslim community leader in the town where she was born, where I was raised as well. And in the town where my dad stayed, that was Yamoussoukro, that's actually the political capital of Ivory Coast, Cote d'Ivoire. He had a mosque in our house, so he was the leader of the community around our house where we live.
So you also were, I think, what's called a muezzin. What is a muezzin? And what does a muezzin do?
How do you say it?
It's an Arabic word, but it mainly stands for, you see, when you have a mask around and the prayer times, you hear Allah, Akbar, you hear the call to prayer, right?
Yeah.
The person who does that is the muezzin.
Muezzin, okay.
So did you go up in the top of the minarets? Did you do that?
Going to the top of the minaret was in the, back in the, you know, historic time when they had no microphone. Since the 1960s, with the arrival of bullhorns and a microphone, it just connected and put the big microphone on top of the minaret, and then from the inside of the mask, you use the microphone to do it, and it goes far away.
Then you don't have to climb so far. But I understand
you didn't have to climb.
You were very good at it. I understand you had a very strong voice.
Yeah, I actually used to imitate almost the well-known imams from Saudi Arabia. Like, one of them was Abdul Basit. Abdul Basit used to be the most voice known in the Quranic lecture. He could use his voice. It's like if you go to Oprah Music Theater, you see how they use the voice to make an emotional impact on the audience.
Yeah.
That's how Abdul Basit was. And I used to imitate Abdul Basit. There was another imam named Matroud. Imam Matroud is still alive. Abdul Basit passed away, I believe, in 1982.
So,
Imam Matroud is still alive right now.
So, Mohammed, you got trained at a very young age to be a muezzin, if
and
I'm saying that right,
imam,
correct?
Yeah.
No, to be a Muslim leader in general. And when I developed a voice talent, then I started as a muezzin. Because muezzin is, imam is above the muezzin. Muezzin is the one who, you know, call for the prayer. Imam is the one who lead the prayer.
I see.
So as a young, I was already muezzin. And when I, you know, matured, I was leading prayer in different families, especially during the month of Ramadan.
And you've written that you got to be called a blessed child, that you got to sit right next to your grandfather, that you were served the best food. People waited until you started to eat before they did. You received offerings of chicken and goat and sheep.
That was a really fun part of my life. Sometimes I wish I had grown up.
Yeah, there's some perks from being in the ministry.
I know. Being the first grandchild of my grandpa, and again, I was the first grandchild because of an extremist religious reaction to my mom has a sister who was the first child of my grandpa. At a teenage age, she was selling oranges and a plate, and she followed this truck driver. Because she was not married and she had sex, she was banned from the family.
Mm.
Completely repudiated. So she had children from her marriage with her husband, but they were never welcome in the house, never, not at all. So my mom, at the age of 13, was given to marriage to my dad, and she was so obedient. So me being her first child, I became like the first grandchild for my grandpa. So he would, you know, give me all his blessing, keep me around him, care for me. He will not let anybody mistreat me at all.
So you write that, of course, male dominance was acceptable and woman abuse was acceptable, and that your mother was only 14 years old when you were born.
When she had me, yep, she was. She was married when she was 13.
Wow.
And actually she had another child before me. So her first child born was when she was 13.
Wow.
I imagine because she was so young, my sister didn't make it. And then I was born. Before I reached even a year and a half, she was pregnant again with my younger brother. He too didn't make it. Maybe that makes me a hero.
Makes you lucky.
Mohammed, I think you wrote that she was thrown out, basically divorced, when you were just 2 years old. Is that right?
Yeah. She was really sick and left in the house like for death. And someone, you know, took her to go to her uncle. And my dad never bothered to go claim her. Nope.
Wow. Well, that's straight out of the Old Testament or the Hebrew Bible that's shared in common, you know, I think with Islam. The Abrahamic religions just let you write a bill of divorcement and kick the woman out.
Very biblical.
Yeah. By the way, the Quran and the Bible are copy paste.
Right. Yeah. Lots of that is shared.
So I want to ask you, Mohammed, did you really, really, in your heart, did you really believe all of that? Did you believe in Allah? Did you believe there was a hell, and were you afraid of hell? Or were you just going through the motions?
I think I went through the motion, and as growing up, I think I believed in it because I didn't know anything different. You know, belief to me is the knowledge of just one thing. As soon as you begin to know the second thing, the belief, it doesn't apply anymore. It becomes like you have it, but now you have a second choice. So growing up, I didn't have any other choice other than just the Islamic faith that I have in my hand. So I think I did believe it, but I mainly followed the motion. Because when you follow the motion, it becomes natural to you, and nobody can talk to you out of it.
But you
do write that you were very scared of hell because that was so emphasized, and that there was there was sort of a metaphor that your grandfather used about hell. These image of the furnace, is that right?
Yeah. And I used to even preach it myself too. Basically, the hell is represented based on different sins. For instance, there is a section of the hell where women would be hanged by their breasts because these are the women who used to not cover their body.
Wow.
There will be a section of the hell where women would be hanged by their tongue. These are the women who did not stay quiet and did not respect their husband.
Wow.
You know, and it goes graphic like this. It is super scary. And I remember, my younger brother, when he would eat something, you know, alone, and I asked him if he said he did not, I would tell him, if you don't, I'm going to do this magic prayer in the Quran, and if you happen to do it, you're going to grow a sixth finger, or your head is going to begin to hurt you right now, and he will confess.
So a lot of hellfire and brimstone going on here.
We have to take a break here.
We're talking with Mohammed Cisse about why he is no longer an imam. And when we come back, Mohammed, you talk about faith slaves. We're going to ask you what you mean by that. And also, you actually memorized the whole Quran. We have to hear about that.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll continue our conversation with former Imam Mohammed Cisse right after the break.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Speaking freely, thinking freely. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. Welcome back. And we're continuing our talk with Mohamed Cisse. It's spelled C-I-S-S-E. Cisse. And he told me it's like, if you see something, say something. Cisse. Mohamed Cisse is a former African imam, a true believer, a muezzin who used to sing the call to prayer, who is now a non-believer, and he's on the board of directors of the Clergy Project, which helps clergy who want to leave the ministry. So, Mohamed, did I hear you right? Did you memorize the entire Quran?
Yeah.
Wow.
That was easy to do.
But you didn't understand Arabic at the time. You just were memorizing what? Noises?
You see, that's the problem with faith. In faith, understanding and knowledge do not apply. You just do. So as a kid, it's just fed to you, and you don't do it, you get beat the crap out. And you just do it. You just do it, and you do it, and you do it, and your brain just take it.
I remember that I did a couple of debates with some Muslims. And they would start the meeting with reading from the Quran. But they didn't just read it. They were like singing it or something. Is that how you did it? Did you?
Yeah, that's the best way to memorize it. That's the best way to memorize it. It's like in the kindergarten. If you want kids to remember numbers, A, B, C, D, E, F, So the tone creates a pattern in your brain, and then you can remember.
Do you also do that back and forth movement that we often see with Muslims and Orthodox Jews? You're moving your body back and forth?
Yes.
So that's part of the memorization?
It's not part of the memorization, but it's part of the style. So the memorization from a section of Islam called the Sufis do that a lot. They go back and forth, body movement with it, and that's just an expression of faith in the prayer. But in my case, no, it's like I just sit there and just take it in.
So, Mohamed, you have talked about what you call faith slaves of faith. What do you mean by that?
Faith slave, it simply means you are the slave of God. That's where the name Abdullah come to play. Abdullah, for instance, was the name of the prophet's father, but Abdullah simply means God's slave. You can hear Abdul Majid. Majid is another name of God. So when you say Abdul Majid, it means Majid's slave. Abdul Hamid. Al Hamid is God. God basically has 99 names based on the Quranic, based on the Quran. So each one of them can be used, and you add Abdul to it means you are the slave of this thing.
The same thing happens in Hebrew. The word abad means working as a slave. They must be cognate language. Yeah.
That's it. That's just to destroy your personal or individual identity to give you to something you have to definitely believe without even seeing.
So, and you also say that you started to get into trouble because you started to question some religious beliefs and practices, such as why do you need to pray to a God who never answers anything? Or why does this God allow suffering, for example? Is that what happened?
Yeah, I had quite a bit of trouble growing up and seeing the poverty my mom was in. And sometimes I would just rebel, like, hold on one second. I'm praying and nothing is changing. My mom is sick and she's being mistreated. We never had enough to eat. Why wouldn't God simply respond? And I would be told that, no, this is not a question you ask. If you ask, I mean, you don't have enough faith. And that's it. He gets suppressed. That practice didn't fit with me. it didn't fit with me. And I immediately continued to question. As soon as you shut me down, I'm going to ask another question. And I started getting beat up. The more I ask, the more it gets violent.
Who beat you up?
My mom's brothers and, you know, her cousins. I don't think they did it because they didn't like me. I think they simply did it because that's how religion drives people up. For them, they were trying to save me from, you know, from being lost because they loved me so much. Remember when Jesus said in the Bible that he didn't come with peace, but he came with sword. He came to have a father against daughter against mother.
Yeah.
It doesn't literally mean he came to destroy families, but it simply means that I'm here to tell you that you cannot love your kid more than you love me. It is insane. It is just sickening.
Mohammed, was your mother, in your community, did women have to be covered up? Did they have to wear veils or purdah? Or?
They have to be covered up, but we were a Sunni, like a Sunni in Saudi Arabia, where they put the woman in burqa.
Well, that's a relief, at least.
Yeah, so my mother, you know, did cover, but not an entire like a burqa all the time. Yes, but the head is constantly covered. Her body is constantly covered. Your neck should not be seen and stuff like that. But her face was outside.
So how did you break free? What is the story? You were an imam and now you're not. What happened?
I had a few friends, childhood friends, who lived nearby our house. They used to go to a normal school. One of them's father was a Christian priest. So oftentimes, they would just welcome me in their house, and they were really nice to me. So I began to develop interest in the Bible. I wanted to be like a, you know, how do you call this kid? Altar boy in the Catholic Church.
Ah.
I really liked that setting.
You wanted to be
and,
an altar boy?
Oftentimes, because he dressed all the time nice. He always has his cute haircut. And he was in this robe, beautifully clean and calm. The tone in the Catholic prayer time is really calming to me. So I sometimes I hide to go to the church and follow them. But at the end, and that guy, that young friend of mine was teaching me how to read and write in French because I didn't go to normal school. And as I learned to read and write French, I began developing interest to reading the Bible. And that's when I pick up the Bible, and the more I read, the more I see the same thing as the Quran. I was like, oh, hold on 1 second.
Huh.
That's not right. I read this thing in the Quran. I know what it means. Now it's the same thing here, so what's going on? And right there, my mind started going south. And when I came across the story of Abraham, Ishmael, and Isaac, to me, that was the end. Basically, Christianity believed that Abraham sacrificed one child to God, that was Isaac. But Islam believed that Abraham did the same thing, but the child was Ishmael.
Yeah.
So one man, two kids, the same sacrifice to the same God. And the Quran tells Muslims to believe in God, his prophets, and his books without distinction. So technically speaking, because Quran came after the Bible, Muslims' claim of Ishmael being the child to be sacrificed cannot really stand up because we have to believe in the Bible. Similarly, the Bible's claim of that sacrifice is difficult to stand up because Ishmael was Abraham's first child. So why would, I mean, I'm not a Middle Eastern, whether Ishmael or Isaac, I mean, what do I have to do with it?
Yeah.
Well, sure.
Well, besides, the whole idea of asking you to kill your child in the first place
to show your faith
is immoral.
Well, of course, that's what Christianity
I mean,
is predicated on.
We just have a minute left here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We just have a minute left before we have to go to the in the show. I just wanted to briefly ask you, people can read your story on the Clergy Project or somewhere. You can tell us where. You got involved with the Clergy Project, and now you're on the board of directors. Briefly, in a half a minute, tell us how that happened.
I was looking for support because I knew I wasn't crazy. And a friend of mine in Philadelphia told me about the Clergy Project, and I Googled it. and I found them. So I submitted my request to join the team. When I joined the team, it was a very friendly conversation in the forum, and I really liked the exchange of idea, reading the story of a Christian priest, you know, coming out of the pulpit. To me, it was really encouraging. I found a voice and I found a community. I realized that, you know what, I'm a way better person being a non-believer than if I am a believer. Yeah. Today, my job entails serving Christian communities everywhere. And they love me as one of them. And that's what I want in this life. I don't want anybody to love me because I'm a Muslim or Christian. I just want to be a human being and serve people without even looking at their religion.
Well, amen to that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much,
you, Muhammad.
So people can find out more about the Clergy Project at clergyproject.org. And I think your story is one of the stories that's there available to be read. So, and thanks for all your hard work being on the board, too. I know it's a big sacrifice for you to do all that.
It's all right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to Free Thought Radio. We want to give a shout-out to listeners in Pennsylvania and New Jersey. In the
on
Philadelphia,
WOOM.
WOOM. And then here, right here in Madison, Wisconsin, to WIDE-FM and WMUULP. In Janesville, Wisconsin, to WADR. In College Station, Texas, to KEOS. In Columbia, Missouri, KOPN. Eugene, Oregon. Hello, listeners out there on the West Coast, KEPW. In San Marcos, Texas, KZSM. In Bellows Falls, Vermont, and in New Hampshire, WOOL Black Sheep Radio. And then in Ithaca in Watkins Glen, New York, hello to listeners to WRFI. And, of course, all of you thousands of podcast listeners, thank you for looking us up. Give us a thumbs up on your provider and tell your friends and relatives to visit us at ffrf.org/radio.
And you can ask for information at ffrf.org or just join us and support not only Free Thought Radio, but everything else the Freedom From Religion Foundation does as a state church watchdog to keep religion out of government and out of social policy, especially COVID policy. Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday